In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hat.
Let's do this. You go first.
I go first. I never go first. You go first.
All right.
Going first is your job.
Welcome, everyone, to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the whole world that is not doing a parody of Gangnam Style. Because I'm sick of those.
We could be.
No.
I mean...
No. I would rather dedicate this whole episode to talking about Charlie Sheen than to do a parody of Gangnam Style. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 85. 85.
And it's probably going to be pretty chilled, because I've had a long week already.
What are you drinking? What is that?
Malt liquor. It is essentially what one would call an alcopop. It is cheap, not very alcoholic tasting, alcoholic beverages that you get at the store. Girly drinks, as it were. But this one's pretty similar to like a Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Oh.
Yes.
Why are you drinking it? Is there something the matter?
No.
You said you've had a hard week?
A very, very busy week.
Busy.
Hasn't been bad. It's
at work, you mean?
At work, working out, all sorts of things. Hmm. Very tiring. Well. How was your week?
Good. Watched the presidential debate the last
time. Oh, yeah. We never talked about the second one, which I wanted to because your prediction was remarkably accurate.
Oh, about how...
As to how the second one would go.
Yeah, well, like I said, Romney, you know, he only has so many tricks, and the president has a bigger bag of tricks, so...
It sounds like nobody could have predicted the third one, though, where they kind of just both agreed on most stuff.
Well, no, actually, I predicted that, too, because it's foreign policy. It's foreign policy, and this has been the way things have gone for a long time between the Republicans and Democrats, is they pretty much agree on foreign policy on all of the broad strokes, and where they disagree, it's like...
Sake of disagreeing.
Well, and like President Obama, what he said was, it sounds like you would have done all the same things, but you would have just yelled louder. And that's basically what it comes down to. The Republicans have the exact same agenda, the exact same things they want to do. They just want to do it faster and more forcefully or whatever. But, of course, we know that as soon as, you know, if Romney were to become president, he'd find out that you just can't do it that way. So the third debate was interesting. There wasn't really anything spectacular that happened, but I do want to say this. Ever since, even before Romney was nominated and I saw, you know, who the potential nominees were, I've been making the statement that Barack Obama will absolutely win unless something happens, you know, some scandal breaks or something that's unforeseen that, you know, might cause his poll numbers to go down or whatever.
And for the record, people, again, William is predicting how things will go. He is not expressing his opinion on who he wishes to win.
No. But since I mentioned anything about the election last time, it has come to my attention that there is kind of a scandal right now that could seriously hurt the president, I think.
And what is that?
It's the whole Benghazi thing. And it's not just that it went wrong and people died and an ambassador died. The thing that might hurt him is the fact that for a very long time afterwards they were talking about how there was a protest that went wrong, and it was about this video on the internet or whatever, rather than it being a coordinated, deliberate September 11th attack on the consulate. In other words, it looks like they lied about it. It really looks like that's what they did. In fact, it looks so much like that, I'm pretty sure that's what happened, that they weren't honest about it. And eventually, when they were honest about it, it's because they had to be. I mean, I could be wrong, but Joe Biden in his debate with Ryan insisted that, no, this was the intelligence we got. But that's hard to believe when Reuters had pictures of the consulate from just before the attack, and there was no protest in evidence. And they were telling this story for several days afterwards, when surely by then, if they'd had bad intelligence in the first chaotic hours, they surely after several days knew what the truth was, and yet they were still telling this story. It looks to me like if they weren't lying about it, then the incompetence level in the whole thing and how it was handled is through the roof. So no matter how you look at it, it's not good for the administration. And from where I'm sitting, it looks like the kind of thing that actually could hurt the president enough that Mitt Romney could win.
So now you think it's genuinely a toss-up?
No. I still think that I'm also observing that this scandal is not sticking. It's kind of like how nothing ever stuck to Reagan. Do you remember that? I was young, you know, when Reagan was president, but I noticed that no matter what happened, it never stuck to that guy. And this seems to be true for Obama, too.
Well, and to be honest, in American society, I feel like they're too removed from this. Yes, it was some Americans and an American ambassador. It was a handful of people far away in a place that most of them probably didn't know existed until then.
Yeah.
And nothing happened afterwards. It's not like it was the start of a war or anything like that.
No, that's true. Now, again, this...
And from what I've seen, it's not like the Republicans are pushing super hard on this scandal.
No, that's true, too, which I find very surprising, because the fact of the matter is, I think people... would think this was very severe.
Other than that one second debate screw up that a friend of mine on Twitter said he's trying to promote the phrase "precede governor" to become like a thing, and I'm all in favor of it. I want to do that from now on. Whenever somebody's about to do something that you know they think is awesome and you know it's gonna fall flat on their face, I just want to be like, "Precede, governor."
But you know, really, it's a serious thing if they weren't honest about it. But I don't think it's going to stick. I do think it's going to be a very close race, but I still think Barack Obama is going to win. However, I will add that it's not impossible that, I mean, for a long time I thought there's no way Romney can win. And I did have that opinion up till recently, but now this scandal, if Romney wins, it's going to be because of, this scandal or something like it, is really hurting the president. But here's the other side of it. A lot of the economic reports coming out now, housing sales and things like that, are very positive, and that's what most people are paying attention to. I think the polls indicate that Barack Obama's ahead, but it's not a slam dunk anymore like I thought it was going to be. I still, though, you know, if I was going to make a prediction, and I am, I'm still going to predict Barack Obama's going to win. But if he loses, it's not going to be a huge surprise, and I think it's going to be because this whole Benghazi thing was a mess. And the last debate was about foreign policy, and in spite of the gaffes that people are hanging on Romney, he held his own pretty well, and they did agree on just about everything, except Romney wanted to be a little more forceful about things, which, again, if you know anything about how these things work, you realize he probably isn't going to be able to do anything more than the president's done. But that might have, his harder line, you know, his stronger rhetoric might have played well with some of those undecided voters. So I wouldn't say that either one, you know, handily won the debate, but I think Romney did fine in terms of being in the home stretch toward the election. And I agree with a lot of people that it's too close to call, but I'm going to call it anyway and say Obama, because I just think that's what's going to happen. But if it doesn't, it's going to be because the scandal just push the thing, the numbers just a little bit over the edge. And again, if Romney wins, it'll be very close. Really, really close if he wins. If Obama wins, it'll be close, but probably only a little bit closer than it was with McCain, which it was only close in the popular vote with McCain, not in the in the electoral votes, which might be the same situation this time.
So we have this magical hat. And it checked its own email. How crazy is that, huh?
Its own email.
Yes.
Wow.
Who would have guessed? And we draw the things it gets in its email out of it. A little weird. And we talk about them. If you would like to write things that would go into it, that would come out of it, that we would talk about, you should email the hat. In fact, even if you don't want to, do it anyway. Email the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. I liked how in the middle of that you checked to see what level my drink was at.
I'm a little worried that you're drinking. When you drink during the show, I worry.
But there's no ice this time. So Sergito can be fine.
Okay.
I bought a couple of them yesterday, and I thought I was going to drink them last night. I ended up only drinking one, so I drank one tonight.
Did I bore you with my political discourse? Or
no, I just hate when we get too serious. Yeah. Honestly, you scared me with your political discourse. I don't like when it's a close race ever, because I like to either be confident that I have nothing to worry about, or just get on with my sorrow already.
Well, and this is
I
why
I like being nervous.
This
about
is the whole
it.
Reason we tried to, as a rule, avoid commenting on current events. But see, I already started talking about the other debate, so it's like now I'm kind of obliged to say something. And that's really the only interesting thing I did all week, because everything else was work. I mean, which is interesting to me, but it won't be interesting to everybody else. So. I'm sure you have other things to talk about. No?
It's been a very busy week at work. I have some cats running in the background for no particular reason, so enjoy that, won't you? I did join a gym on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, you said
I'm
you were going to do
that. Member. And I started working out 5:30 a.m. Monday morning.
How was it?
Not unlike my first day of middle school.
I don't know what that was like either.
Kind of nervous. Oh. You don't really know your way around. You do things wrong, but you're too scared to ask any of the cool kids for help. Hmm. And so you just sort of stumble through and imagine everyone staring at you when really they probably don't care. And just sort of get through it and get out.
And other than those uncomfortable moments, was it?
It's been fine. It's been good.
Positive experience.
Today was less so.
Why is that?
Apparently the wall, when you just start working out, happens on Thursday. First day, all I'm doing right now, I'm doing my stretching and my crunches like I always have done at the gym. And then I get on one of their recumbent stationary bikes, and I'm biking for 20 minutes. And the first day I was just doing it on manual because I didn't understand how the thing worked. And then after that, I picked this fat burn program, which means it increases the resistance in the middle a whole bunch and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the first day was hard. I'd never done it before. The second day, maybe a little harder because I was a little sore. Third day, Wednesday, also still a little sore, so it was a little hard. Today, holy shit. From minute one, I was like, I don't think I can do it. And there were times today where I was like, is this, like, am I supposed to stop? Like, this seems like it should not hurt my legs this much. But I did it. I did the full 20 again.
Oh, good job.
Really hurt my legs all day today. And I think it's just a point in that I've been talking with the more exercise-conscious people. And one of them did say, they said, if it gets really bad, you know, you can take a day off. Just be careful that it doesn't turn into 2 days or three days.
Right.
And mostly, since I'm not doing it on the weekends, I'm like, I'll still do it tomorrow because then I'm going to have 2 days off. So I'm going to push through to that. But yeah, today was rough, but I still did it. So I was pretty pleased about that.
Good. Good job.
Weirdly, getting up at 5:30 and going to the gym, not that hard.
Why is that weird to you?
Okay, people, you got to help me out on this one. I think for most people, you say, so, how would you feel about getting up at 5:30 in the morning every weekday before work and going to the gym? Do you think that's something that would require a lot of willpower from you? Do you think that's something that you would or could do? Most people would say something along the lines of, ugh, and then maybe follow it up with other hesitant terms.
Hmm.
It's been very easy. That part. The fatigue, later, and I've been tired because I wake up sore. But in the morning, I'm never... I mean, and I've had this in the past with things where I'm like, oh, I don't want to wake up. But this one, like, I get up, and there's a moment where I'm like, wow, it'd be nice to stay in bed. But just for, like, a moment.
Hmm.
Nothing big. I haven't... Basically, not only have I not been tempted to not do it any day, I haven't had the urge. It's very weird. I had the urge when I'm on the bike to stop because it sucks.
Right.
But like the actual, which is the hard part, really, in terms of willpower, getting up at 5:30 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
in dark, mm-hmm. getting dressed and driving to the gym, should take a lot of willpower, and it's not being a problem at all so far. Hmm. Surprised and pleased about that. But
yeah, that's good.
And yeah, work's been very busy. We did finally game this week.
Oh, good.
Didn't get a lot done. We sort of had to deal with some issues. There have been some issues with me having problems with how I'm GMing and some players not getting as much out of things and stuff like that. And so some stuff sort of came to a head and we're changing a little bit the way we deal with some stuff.
Hmm.
But I think it's going to be good. But yeah, our people have successfully got the artifact they were going for and they're trying to take it back, but they're in long ethical debate about whether or not to give this powerful unknown artifact to someone who is clearly an evil, nasty person. So they're going to discuss that, I think. But at the time, they basically voted to run like hell since people were trying to kill them and worry about it later. One of our PCs is having brain troubles. The one who had her brain messed with is now having gaps in her memory, and the most recent one is they've just gotten on board a train, and she wants to know who the stranger is hanging out with them, and the stranger is her long-term boyfriend.
Oh, no.
Who is not a player character. And that's where I left them. We're getting together this Saturday not to game. We're just going to watch stupid movies, I think.
Hmm.
But yeah, so I think things are going well. Not too much else.
Halloween's going to happen before we broadcast next.
Yes.
Next.
Spooky.
So what are you doing?
Same thing we do every year. Sit right here, order rigatoni, and open the door for children's.
Oh.
Our tradition. This year, it's on a Wednesday, so it's on date night. So that kind of works out well. I don't know... It's Trish's date night, so I don't know what we'll do. I don't know if I'll read a book to her, or we'll try and watch a movie on the computer, or what.
I don't think we know exactly what we're going to do.
You should figure that out.
Yeah.
Maybe take Ezzy with you.
Nah, it's all right. She's not big on Halloween.
She's not big on most stuff.
She doesn't like that when you do that.
I know, that's why I do that. Piss her off.
Yeah, not much else to report this week for me.
Just been working. A lot of stuff done at work.
Good.
All right. So, hat.
Yeah, let's do that.
Remember, folks, email the hat, or this is our whole show. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com.
I guess you'll be typing questions onto the descriptions now. I mean,
yes, you have to save those things where I can
pretty much unanimous.
It did seem there was some talk to put up some sort of separate page and to go back and get old ones and all that. And I thought about that, and then I thought, yeah, fuck y'all. So I'll put the questions on the actual show notes for each episode. But the rest, yeah, go fuck yourselves.
This is from Blood Sparrow.
Blood Sparrow!
She would like us to define, quote, the powers that be.
All right. End quote. As opposed to the powers that is.
Yeah.
The powers that am.
Well, of course, this is a phrase people use in a relative sense to mean...
Did you just fart? I think you did. She's prone to that, and it smells really bad.
Okay.
And it wasn't me, and I'm assuming it wasn't you.
No, it wasn't.
So I think it was Ezzy. Don't fart.
Well, I'm sitting clear over here, so I don't think
I don't know, maybe you have fart directional powers. Like, ricochet it off the wall.
A relative term to mean the people who have the most influence over whatever it is you're talking about. For example, if you're speaking with a coworker, and you mention the powers that be in relation to a particular policy at work, you're probably referring to whatever managers or executives are responsible for that particular policy.
Why do you sound like you're reading this off of something?
I don't know.
Weird.
So sometimes the term "the powers that be" is the definition is determined by the context. However, I think there's a broader. What are you doing? I think there's a broader
Suddenly
definition.
Your armpit grew a cat face. Yeah. It was kind of awesome, and then it bit you.
There's a broader definition, I think, that people use in a very general kind of way.
Similar to the man.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, they're probably synonymous in the way that people use them when they're in the broadest sense of the
term. I feel like there's a connotation associated with the powers that be. That you have to get high enough up in the hierarchy that there's no connection, sort of. Like, I feel like the powers that be are not my boss. They're my boss. They're somebody who's far enough away that, like, they know nothing about my job and I know nothing about their job, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's usually true.
And so, like, the powers that be isn't my city council. The powers that be is Congress. The powers that be is the president. Because you want them to be far enough removed that they become this sort of quasi-immortal being sort of thing.
Now, it becomes an interesting question to ask when those people talk about the powers that be, who are they talking about?
I could tell you, but then the men in the black SUVs come for me. Those are the powers that actually be. The old ones.
The old ones.
Yes. So, I learned something today.
What's that?
I have a poor sense of... Well, I've had this idea for a while. I have a poor sense of cultural penetration. Concepts that I think are relatively niche are often very broadly known, and concepts that I think would be very common, much more narrow populace knows. I've had this before. We've talked about this on the show. My belief that not everybody knows Venn diagrams, and apparently everybody knows Venn diagrams.
Well, that was my presumption.
Today, I discovered that far fewer people than I realize are familiar with Schrodinger's cat.
Oh.
Which I found very weird. Because I had an insight about the whole thing, and I wanted to talk with somebody about it, and it took me about 4 tries to find somebody who knew so I could talk with them about it. And so after that, I kind of did this sort of unofficial poll, and I would say slightly less than half the individuals. And you have to understand, I'm working in a place basically full of academics. And slightly less than half knew. It was weird.
That's interesting.
And see, and I would assume all of our listeners familiar with Schrodinger's cat. I wonder if I'm wrong.
I guess they could let us know on the blog.
On the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com.
I'm not sure what I would have said before your informal poll about how many people know who Schrodinger's cat is. But I remember we talked about Venn diagrams, and I thought everybody must know what those are because you learn about them in elementary school.
See, I don't remember learning about them in elementary school.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you went over it pretty much in every grade from first grade on until
you know
junior
what I
high or
do
something.
Remember learning about in school?
What's that?
This is funny. This has come up a couple times recently, and people are shocked. I apparently fit into just the perfect demographic of geographical background, age, and whatever else, the Venn diagram, if you will, over all these overlapping circles. I actually, for a very short period of time, studied Ebonics in secondary education.
Hmm.
It was in my English class, I believe. We did some stuff about the dialect of Ebonics, and I remember reading some stuff and learning about it.
Hmm.
For the, like, 3 seconds between when somebody came up with the idea of Ebonics and when everybody said, you know what? This is pretty horribly racist and we should stop. That little tiny window, I was actually in school. Very weird.
But when I was studying linguistics at the University of Iowa, that they never called it that. I remember hearing that in the media and in the news. They did have something they called Black Vernacular English, is what they called it, because there's a particular grammatical structure, actually, to some of those dialects. So it's a thing, you know. I mean, it's from a linguistic standpoint,
I feel like that's a poor nomenclature.
Well, no, it probably that's what they called it.
I believe the lines can be drawn socioeconomically and, of course, socioculturally.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I think it's a complete. I think it becomes a correlation versus causation thing to at all associate it with particular ethnic background.
Yeah, and I imagine now they probably tie it. I mean, the struggles they had with that terminology back then, you know, Ebonics, Black Vernacular English, they had those struggles in a lot of areas, including commercial areas, and it wasn't long after that that if you wanted to talk about anything that pertained to that particular aspect of American experience, you called it urban.
Yes, I was going to say urban. Urban became the big one. I feel like urban is still a big one.
Yeah.
But it may just be in modern entertainment. There's lots of jokes of people saying urban because they feel like they can't say black.
Of course, I think there is an appreciation for the fact that as you were just pointing out, socioeconomic issues and so on, in terms of how people respond to things, what their dialect is. It's not just African American people. You know, there's European American people who live in those same neighborhoods who speak the same way and have a similar experience.
Yes.
There's Hispanic American people who live in those neighborhoods and have the same experience. So it doesn't really have to have anything to do with race.
But one begets the other in that then there is a certain ethnic cultural identity that is associated with such things. And people in that socioeconomic situation associate, say, their level of blackness with how much their language conforms to that.
No, that's
you'll run into that, and then you get into concepts like
that's absolutely right.
People being too bougie, as it were, for speaking a certain way. Bougie being Ebonics for bourgeois. I learned it in school. It's not my fault. So you may recall, for many, many years, far too many years, there was a reoccurring sketch on Saturday Night Live called MacGruber.
Well, didn't they make a movie?
They eventually made a movie. And here's the problem. MacGruber was a single joke.
Well, pretty much, yeah.
And they
but I
did
heard
it,
the film did well.
No.
Oh, I thought.
The film did not do
I
well.
The film
no.
Did well.
And they would just take whoever the host was and make them into some sort of amusing character that would then be the sidekick. I remember there was an episode with Betty White, and she was his grandma, and so he was working with his grandma. And the situations are always the same. They're always stuck in some place, and there's 20 seconds to defuse a bomb, and it's supposed to be a MacGyver-style thing, and then something funny happens and distracts them long enough that it explodes.
Hmm.
And they frequently do, like, three or four in a single episode, and it's like a running, you know, story. For like a, and I remember... And this, I'm telling you right now, this whole story sounds worse and worse and worse, and then it gets to the part that I loved. Because MacGruber, stupid, hate it, sick of it. And this particular episode of Saturday Night Live was being hosted by Charles Barkley.
Okay.
Who I do not like and I do not consider funny.
Okay.
And the entire premise of this overarching thing was that Charles Barkley was playing his employee, and Charles Barkley is black, and that MacGruber had potentially some inappropriate and racist tendencies and beliefs. And I forget what it was. There was something in the very first bit that was really rude, and they accused him of being racist, and while they were arguing about it, it exploded or whatever. But all I know is that the point that I found funny, they come back and he had gone through sensitivity training.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're in this thing and they only got 20 seconds to MacGruber. And MacGruber's like, okay, I forget what Charles Barkley said. Let's go with Charles. Mr. Charles, can you hand me that pen over there? And you look and there's a black pen, a red pen, and a yellow pen. And he goes, which one? And he's like, the left one. And he's like, your left or my left? We only got a few seconds. He's like, the one that might be technically darker than the others, but that doesn't say anything. And finally, Charles is like, you mean the black one? He's like, oh, what? You can say it? And they're finally like, okay, we don't have time for this. You have to, there's like 3 seconds. He goes, okay, forget about that. Just hand me the Chinese pen. Oh, I mean yellow. Oh, I'm a racist. And then they exploded. And I loved that moment where he says, hand me the Chinese pen, I mean yellow, and then suddenly he just deflates and goes, oh, I am a racist. And then it exploded. And I felt like that right now when I said the bougie is Ebonics for bourgeois. Oh, wait, I meant urban. No, I'm a racist. Yes, that story didn't go anywhere. I'm very tired and mildly buzzed. I'm not the best podcaster tonight, so... You know what? You can deal. You've got William.
Well, maybe Budsparrow would like to tell us who she thinks the powers that be are. Or define it on the blog.
I think the powers that be would be an awesome, like, Saturday morning cartoon superhero show.
Well, you know, you could also read this you know.
Their nemeses would be the powers that are.
Yeah, the completely existential, the powers that be. They just, you know, they find their center. They find the stillness and they just be.
Yes.
Those are some pretty...
As opposed to the powers that do.
Yeah. No. We don't have to do. We can just be.
The idiom I use at work all the time is grown-ups.
Grown-ups.
Whenever I'm referring to a need for assistance from somebody who has more authority than me to make a decision or... something that I don't know, but I know somebody higher up, you know, in a higher pay grade, I always refer to them as grown-ups. And I'll go to... And people... This drives people crazy, because if I'm looking for people in that category, and I find other people who are not in that category, and I wish to inquire as to the location of said people, I say, I need to find a grown-up right now. Can you tell me where one is? And they're like, I'm a grown-up. I'm like, no, not for this. Or when people say, like, what do we do about this? And that's for the grown-ups to the side. And they're like, but I'm a grown-up. And I'm, no. It drives people crazy. I love it. I love considering everybody else grown-ups. Because I don't want to grow up. I am, in fact, a Toys R Us kid.
Peter Pan, as it were.
There's, like, a million toys at Toys R Us that I can play with. From bikes to planes to video games. It's the biggest toy store there is. I don't want to grow up, because if I did, I couldn't be a Toys R Us kid.
Yeah.
I think it's from bikes to trains, not planes, but you could get away with it.
So I take it you're not even interested anymore in Blood Sparrows.
I feel like where else are we going to go with it?
Well, then maybe we should just draw something else.
All right. Good question, though, Blood Sparrow. I like it. It was beautiful. It does remind me also, one of my best friends in college used as a screen name and a pseudonym for a while, They, because he was specifically like, people say, you know what they say.
Mm-hmm.
He decided he was going to be They.
Boy, that,
which is similar to the powers that be.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Because then you have to say all this stuff that people expect you to say.
I think he would just contradict people at that point. They'd say, you know, they say da da da, and he'd be like, no, I don't.
Oh. Yeah, I suppose you can do that.
Yeah. All right. This one is from
This is a sight gag.
I know.
You realize that,
visual
don't you?
Gag on an audio podcast. I love it. For those of you not watching the video feed, everybody, there isn't one. I held up the card, looked at it, turned it upside down, looked at it, turned it upside down again. It was right side up the first time. This one's from Mark McKibben.
Hey.
Hard hat number one. Dear Tmth, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Okay, this is a new iteration of questions. You may recall in the past, somebody has asked us what our favorite superpower was.
Is saying, do you recall in the past, is that redundant?
You may recall that in times past.
Oh, okay. I get it. Sorry.
You were told to go fuck yourself. Well, I'd like to reiterate. Somebody once asked us what superpowers we would want if we get it. And I believe we ended on, you wanted flight and I wanted invisibility. I believe is where that ended.
Okay. Well, I don't remember, but okay.
Mark McKibben asks, Dear TMTH, excluding flight and invisibility, what superpower would you most want to have?
Mm.
I feel like we're setting a dangerous precedent here.
Yeah. This is just going to keep going and going and going.
And you can do this with so many of those, excluding the ones you talked about last time. What are your favorite board games?
Flight and invisibility.
Wait, can we each take the other one? Like,
apparently.
Now I'll have flight.
And no, I think it's
all right.
Excluding in an exclusive way.
Mm.
Flight and invisibility. Well, psychic ability. Reading minds.
Reading minds.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's necessary for it also to include being able to control minds.
Mm.
Like Professor X or whatever.
Yeah.
But let's say it does.
All right. Yeah, why not?
Why not? Throw that in.
It's good.
Now, so you need to say control of magnetism. So then.
Ah-ha!
You're Magneto. And,
but I don't consider that interesting anymore because I saw X-Men First Class and saw that it really isn't interesting at all. I hate that movie. And I'm one of the few. Most people seem to like it.
Yep.
I hate that movie.
I thought it was okay.
Hated that fucking movie.
I didn't hate it, but it wasn't that good.
William.
No,
William.
No, I...
William.
I know, but...
Hated it.
Pick your thing.
All right.
Wow.
I think I want to take a page from Thor and go with the power of ventriloquism.
Not a superpower. Sorry. It's not.
If you do it really well.
No, it's not a superpower.
All right.
like to say, I want to be a master of disguise, not a superpower.
Yeah. But I think you may have hit on it. I think, can't fly, can't turn invisible. I think I like shape-shifting.
Hey, that's a good one.
I feel like that would be kind of awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you were a shapeshifter, you could be virtually invisible.
And just like... I mean, obviously, there are applications for superheroing, as it were. Although not as much of the brute force crime fighting. But you could still... There's stuff. You could do stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I look like one of your bank robbers, and when we get back to the hideout, then I bust you. You know, that kind of thing. But I think, just in general, I don't think I would ever get old, because you pretty much would be able to then infiltrate any facet of society, any organization.
Yeah.
You want to see how the other half lives, no matter what other half that is, go do it.
Well, this is what I mean. It's kind of like being invisible. You have to be visible to actually see, but you can blend in so that it achieves the same thing.
And it gives you the added benefit of maybe increased, of obviously increased interaction. I almost might like it better than invisibility. I don't know. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I like that.
I was also thinking of teleportation.
Yeah. That one's just handy. It doesn't seem nearly as interesting, but it's very useful.
Well, you don't think it'd be interesting, or you don't think at first that it would be interesting, except to getting from one place to the other. But when you see people using it in a fight in films, you see how really useful it can be.
Yeah. Well, then you can get rid of, you know, co-location, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that'd be a good one, I guess. But
the ability to turn ice cream into more ice cream.
But we talked about this last time. If you're fighting crime, you know. Well, for example, Shape, like you said, you could infiltrate someone's gang, and then you can bust them. But how? You don't have super strength. Are you going to use the guns that they gave you as a member of their gang?
Yes.
But there's just you, and you're outnumbered.
Yeah, but they trust me, and I shoot them all before. Okay. Or
you
or
shoot them all.
You don't do as much of a lone gunman thing. You look like one of their bank robbers, and then they drive you back to the hideout, and then you say, I gotta go to the bathroom, and you call the police.
Oh, call the police, okay.
And if you're good about it, the police are already waiting for your call.
Yeah, 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 right.
And you say, it's here. And they say, thank you. We'll be there in a minute.
Right, right.
And then you stay in the bathroom, because it's safer there.
Yeah, probably. Boy, that was easy.
Yeah.
Maybe we could draw another one.
I think so.
And actually do more than two tonight.
Yeah, but why risk it?
Well, we could end the show right now.
Only been 42 minutes.
Well, we probably better draw another one then.
I'm not finished with my drink.
I think it's finished with you.
You remember the time we went to Provincial Park?
No.
Me neither.
Anon asks...
Anon!
Chili! Beans or no beans?
Oh, this is a much more significant question than it seems.
Yeah. Well...
It would have to be, really. I mean, it doesn't seem that significant.
I presume the person's asking... Well, I guess I shouldn't presume. I mean, I don't think the person's just asking for a personal preference. I think they're asking, you know...
Definitively.
Yeah, does chili have beans or not? Or, you know, if chili has beans, is that something that's added to it? Or is chili supposed to have beans? And to my knowledge, beans is an option in chili, not a requirement. That's my understanding. I could be wrong about that.
I believe it's not even that. I believe it is wholly an addition to chili. And that... Chili does not have beans as a in and of itself, and if you put beans in it, it is chili, and there's also some beans there.
Yeah, yeah.
The beans do not become subsumed in the product that is chili.
No, I think you're right.
In a categorical sense. They obviously do in a physical sense.
Right, right.
But
I like beans in my
chili. Well, that's the thing. I feel like that's... the boring end. I'm much more interested about our preferences because I feel like most people prefer beans. And if I'm honest, if somebody says, I'm going to give you a bowl of chili to eat with your face, do you want some beans in there or do you not? I'm probably going to say yes, because even I, in all of my gastrointestinal disgustingness and digestive evil, find it hard to consider I'm going to eat a bowl of just beef in spicy juice.
Well, you know, there's probably chunks of peppers and onions and other things.
Then maybe, because, like, that's a situational answer. But in general, no, I like it better without the beans. When I go to Steak and Shake and I get the Chili Mac, I get the kind without the beans.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know you could get a kind without
the beans. Yes. Technically, the Chili Mac is without beans.
Oh.
And it's the Chili Three Ways or whatever, that's, and Chili Five Ways and stuff. Those are the ones. There's like, because there's variants, you know. There's the basic and then there's with the cheese and onions and on it and all. But there's two different kinds. And there's one with and without.
Yeah, you know, when we used to have chili cook-offs at work,
there's always beans in there.
I think every single person had beans.
That's the thing. In terms of the definition, I believe it is not there. And I think I have determined this purely from labels of cans of chili at the store. But I think culturally, there are always beans. I think if you say to somebody, you want a cup of chili? And they say yes, they are going to be shocked if there are no beans in it. And
this is an American thing? Or?
To carry the concept, they refer to it as chili beef when there's no beans in it at Steak and Shake.
Oh, con carne? Or?
It's a chili beef chili as opposed beef. To just... I think it's an American... It's a North American thing.
Although chili is a North American thing,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. No, the whole thing...
So
chili with an I as opposed to chili with an E.
Yeah, if most people... If chili is a North American or American thing, and most people now think of it as having beans... Doesn't that just change the definition of it? Like, maybe it didn't originally have beans, but now it does.
That is Oxford English Dictionary talk, and I will not have it in my house.
I'm just saying.
By that token, imply and infer are synonyms.
Yeah, I know, but listen.
It's not okay.
The culture that invented this dish has the prerogative to change it.
So the culture that invented the words imply and infer...
No, I'm talking about a dish. I'm not talking about a word or a concept. I'm talking about a recipe.
Slippery slope.
It's like pizza, okay? For a while, pizza could have all kinds of different sauces. Didn't necessarily have cheese. But now, everybody thinks of a pizza as having tomato sauce and mozzarella cheese. And there are fewer places you can go that... When I was growing up, if you could go to Chicago or lots of places, and if you ordered a pizza, you had to be specific about what kind of sauce you were going to have on it, and if you were going to have cheese as a separate topping, because that wasn't a given when you ordered pizza there. Now, I think it's harder to find a place that when you order a pizza and you ask for certain toppings, they already assume that it's going to have tomato sauce and mozzarella cheese on it. So,
and you think the places that don't should no longer be called pizza?
No, I'm just saying that the definition of pizza is being transformed by the culture that invented it. So, while we can say, historically speaking, chili used to either not have beans or beans were optional, now pretty much people expect there to be beans in the chili, and so that's what chili is.
I want a line drawn.
Why?
A line drawn and the cultural modern cultural definition versus the strict original definition, because I like it without beans.
Well, so I want you that, can still get pizzas
I want
without
that to be the right one.
You can still get pizzas without a tomato sauce and mozzarella cheese. You just have to now you have to say I want this kind of sauce and I don't want cheese, or I want this kind of cheese.
That makes me seem like the weird person. I want me to be right.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but I'm are the weird person.
I'm okay with people eating the chili with beans, but they have to say chili with beans, or I will punch them. I came up with a plan at work for something recently that involved when people didn't do it the right way, I was going to stab them with a steak knife. The plan did not fly well. And I forgot to bring my steak knife.
And that's why it didn't fly well, because you forgot?
No, and I forgot to bring my steak knife.
Oh. Well, then how do you... If you didn't have your steak knife, how do you know...
I proposed this plan.
Oh, you proposed it. And
yes.
People didn't think it was a good idea.
People were like,
They must have thought the chances were pretty good that they would be wrong in your eyes or something.
No, it was a specific thing. It actually involved people leaving the lights on after they left a particular conference.
Okay, so they must have thought that they would do that.
Well, yeah, it's a big problem. That's why I came up with the solution, because I thought this would solve it fairly quickly.
Well, I think the fact that people don't want you to do it proves that it would solve it fairly
quickly. Yeah.
So,
and the fact...
So it actually flew really well.
You don't want me to declare chili... What were we talking about?
I don't know.
All right, then.
Should we draw another one? We could get four.
Oh, my goodness.
And you could actually draw two instead of just one.
Woo! I have a lot less of my self-esteem tied into how many questions I draw out of the hat than you do.
I don't think I do either, but...
Yes, but
you probably
wrong.
Still have less than me, yeah.
Yes. This one's from Kia B.
Wow.
Dear the Magical Talking Hat, discuss conventional versus naturopathic medicine. First of all, I don't think I believe naturopathic is a word.
Well, I don't know. Is the hat picky about those things?
No, but I believe in order for us to discuss this, we first have to define that. And so I'd like to define naturopathic medicine as the belief that the only way to deal with infection is the placing of open-faced peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on wounds. Given that, I think I'm in support of conventional medicine primarily. I mean, I don't want to be closed-minded. I just think that's a stupid idea. So, thanks for your question. Sorry, and what are your views on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on wounds? Versus, you know, medicine.
Sounds delicious. Well,
on open wounds?
Not after they've been on the wound. It'd probably never get to the wound because I would eat it. I'd put some jelly on there. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Awesome.
And then those people die of sepsis. Way to go.
But I got a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Wow. Wow. Somewhere in the distance I hear alternate universe William saying, "Hey, quit biting my style." Okay, so I'm assuming naturopathic, you know, holistic, dare I use the word traditional, you know, natural remedies. Probably naturopathic is totally a real word, and he is going to write in and be pissed. And
well,
I will apologize to no one ever.
I do believe we're talking about any treatment that is not conventional medicine.
Can we talk about homeopathy?
Homeopathy
is hilarious.
I suppose we could.
Homeopathy is the funniest thing ever to kill people.
I'm not a fan of conventional medicine, which isn't to say I'm a fan of anything that's not traditional medicine, because there are a lot of things that are not traditional medicine that
so
are
really
crazy.
William hates medicine. He wants everyone to die of illness the first time they get sick.
I don't know. We don't have enough time, even if we pulled this question first and didn't talk about our weeks, for me to talk about all the things I don't like about modern conventional medicine.
I believe that.
Because, I don't know. I don't even know where to start. And I feel bad because...
How about standard operating procedure to give Pitocin to all mothers in labor because it gets them out of the hospital faster?
Yeah, things like that. Here's something that I've noticed. It's interesting. We worked for a computer software company in the support area where people would call us and we would troubleshoot over the phone whatever is wrong with their software, which is quite a challenging thing to do. You have to somehow get them to tell you what they're seeing on their screen, what buttons they're pushing, what little icons they're clicking, and they have to be giving you the right information, accurate information, and then you have to run them through some procedures to troubleshoot the problem. But when you have a job like that or you work in a place like that, you learn general troubleshooting practices and perspectives, you know, things that you use everywhere in your life.
I don't believe that's necessarily true for all such places. But it was a major point of that employer that we learned troubleshooting as a concept.
Right.
Which can be taken completely outside of its context.
Yes. I have met many doctors that have no clue what troubleshooting is, how to do it, and they certainly don't apply it to their doctor-patient interactions.
Yep.
What typically happens in those interactions, and there's all kinds of reasons it happens this way. There's pressure on doctors to move patients through and everything. I'm not trying to put a lot of blame on doctors because there's a lot of pressure for them to do things this way. But where we worked, it was like the worst tech on the floor who barely listens to what the customer is saying, tries to find anything the customer is saying to latch onto to give them some procedure to run that will get them off the phone. They have no idea if the procedure will work, but they don't care. The person's off the phone. They can put in their call notes that they gave the person a solution. They can close the call. And, of course, the person's going to call back later because their issue wasn't addressed. The person didn't listen to what their problem was and didn't tell them anything that would work.
Now pull it in.
Well, this is what a lot of physicians do, too.
There we go.
They hear a very superficial a description of the problem. They don't actively listen. They don't ask any probing questions to try to make sure that the patient is being clear. They just wait for the magic word, the particular set of complaints, so that they can throw a particular drug at it, especially if it's a pain reliever or something really simple, and send the person home and hope they don't come back.
When I was not working under you there, I was working over in the accounting section, and there was a guy we worked with. He's new. He wasn't very good. And somebody called in one time with a sucking chest wound. And he said, apply pressure, elevate the feet, and he hung up and he closed the call. And I couldn't even believe it. He was fired shortly afterwards.
Yeah,
so
right. But you know, and that's just one thing. Then there's the medicines that they push and why they push them and the whole drug industry and the fact that a lot of medications are synthesized from natural sources. But when you take the so-called active ingredient away from the natural source, it doesn't work as well. And sometimes it doesn't even do the same thing because it has to interact with some of the other things that are in the natural source. But that said, you've got a lot of herbalists that don't understand any of this either. So they're just telling people, you know, to take this, that, or the other thing without any dosages or without any scientific background on what they're asking people to take. So there's this. So you've got medicine that seems to be driven by all the wrong forces, and therefore it's giving all the wrong answers to all the wrong people. And the only alternative you have, Well, not the only
death.
Not the only alternative, but if you're looking for an alternative, the people who really know what they're doing outside of conventional medicine are pretty hard to find. You can find a lot of people who think they know what they're doing, and they can say, "Oh, take this herb or take that herb," and they really don't know. They have no idea what the herb really does. It's probably based on some tradition or anecdotal thing, not any kind of research. There's no notion of any type of dosage that you should take or anything like that. And so there's obviously a middle ground that can be struck here where we're actually doing good, decent medicine. We're not treating the patients like they're the problem rather than the person we need to be paying attention to. But also, we're not just giving people poison and hoping that the poison takes care of the disease before it kills the patient. And, I've got very personal stories about this that bother me a great deal. I feel like my mother wasn't treated properly, and that eventually it led to her premature death. I have a friend who had cancer who I think was treated very recklessly, and she eventually died. So, I mean, I take this very seriously, and I have some very disturbing and personal issues with this, but I also acknowledge that it's, you can't just say, well, you know, throw medicine away and buy herbs at the local co-op, because what are you doing there? How do you know what you're getting? And so there's this huge gap, and there needs to be something done in between there to fix the problems on both sides of the spectrum.
Well, and I feel like there is something of a move, but it mostly drives me crazy. Because I realize this in my own situation. Nobody's trying to fix or get me to fix the things that are wrong with me. They're trying to find ways that I can keep those things being wrong with me and still be okay.
Comfortable, yeah.
So,
treating the symptoms, not the cause.
I have sleep apnea, which is probably related to my weight. Mm-hmm. We don't attempt to make me healthier. We give me a machine that breathes for me at night.
Right.
I have diabetes. Yes, we kind of talk about it, but realistically, I don't have to do anything there either, because they're giving me pills.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And admittedly, if I did nothing, they'd have to give me more pills, and eventually it wouldn't work as well. But for quite a while, I could just ignore it, and the pills would work.
No, that's true.
And so much of that stuff, I feel like there is slowly becoming a change, and I hate to say this, because I mock it at my workplace all the time, but the concept of wellness, the concept of preventative medicine,
right, but
is slowly becoming a thing, but it's really slow.
But the concept itself has been around for a long time, and again, it's hard to blame the doctors here, because a lot of doctors start their career thinking they're going to do that kind of thing. They're going to do preventative medicine, but here's the thing. Most problems that a person has that are chronic problems that aren't just going to go away if they wait long enough.
Yeah.
The treatment is a lifestyle change of some kind.
Yes.
And doctors don't want to tell people that because people don't want to hear it. The fact that
do it.
Yeah, a doctor can start their career telling people this over and over and over again, and the person will say, well, can't you just give me a pill?
Yeah,
and eventually that's all the doctor's going to do.
Yes, but this is why I say there's a change, because you know what's happening? It's coming down to money. Insurance premiums are starting. My workplace says we're doing all this wellness, we're doing all this preventative care because it's the right thing to do and we'll all be happier enough, which is not a lie in that may happen, but it's absolute bullshit as to why they're doing it. They're doing the same reason any other corporation is doing it, and more are, because they've discovered that in an actuarial table, people who are doing this shit are going to go to the doctor less.
Mm.
And consequently, insurance companies are knocking down premiums if you do this. If you have a wellness program and X amount of your employees sign up for it, you have to pay less.
Yeah, right.
And that, as shallow and awful as it is as a reason, is still effective or becoming effective. And so I hate that that's the way it had to go about it, but I think it's starting to have something of an impact.
Well, and also,
hell, it's working on me.
Another thing to consider here is like I said, a lot of treatments are lifestyle changes. I mean, that's just that's all there is to it.
Unless it's an acute thing.
That
pretty much
or congenital.
Or congenital, exactly.
Diet is huge. People can change their diet, anything from just portion sizes in their diet to actually cutting out certain things. Food allergies is something that a lot of people don't think about. If people took a little time to figure out which foods are making them feel bad and stop eating those, they'd feel better. There's just a ton of things out there. And
basic physical activity issues.
And most of that's right. And most
substance abuse.
Most of that stuff eliminates the need for most medicines, whether they're herbal or chemical or whatever.
Yeah.
And then if you're doing those things and you're treating some of your conditions that way, a lot of times you can find certain non-synthetic remedies. For example, I found that eating extreme dark chocolate helps me with my headache sometimes. Mm. And that's good that I found that remedy, but that's not going to work for everyone.
Yeah.
And there are herbs out there that are said to help migraines and headaches that don't work for me. But then again, I've tried to take things like Excedrin, and that doesn't work for me either. But the point is, you know, there's really no one catch-all pill that's going to help with any given thing. And if you make certain lifestyle changes, you're going to eliminate most of the need for any of that stuff. But you know, that's what people don't want to do. Now, what you're saying is that workplaces are kind of getting into this and trying to encourage their workforce to do this.
It's becoming a fad because it's becoming an economic imperative.
Now,
whether or not it holds, who knows?
Well, the economic imperative is going to hold, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not going to go away anytime soon. I do think modern medicine is in a sad state on a lot of levels. And healthcare costs, we haven't even talked about that. And how...
I think that's less... That's more specific to this country.
Well, I suppose, but here's an interesting thing. You know, I'm constantly hearing about hospitals or groups of hospitals, like in Cedar Rapids, they're doing it right now, building these huge complexes of buildings, and here at the University of Iowa, I came here in 1987, and there's been a major construction projects going on at the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics pretty much nonstop since I came here.
The phone is ringing, but we love you too much to answer it.
So, where's that money coming from? You know,
you can tell. Go to the wing and read the name on it.
Yeah, it's named after after a guy. But I mean, come on, you know, if someone is making money, I mean, people say, oh, healthcare prices are so high, and you know, it's just because the care is that expensive. Like nobody's really making any money. That the doctors aren't making money. The hospitals aren't making money. It just everything just costs a lot. Yeah. No, somebody's making money.
Well, clearly, because again, this is specific to this country.
And those people need to make less money. I mean, they don't have to make all that. They don't have to gouge everybody on healthcare.
We can talk about
doing
Western medicine. We don't ever talk about Western healthcare, because outside of this country, Western healthcare is not in that bad of shape.
Well, but see, now that's a whole other topic, because
I'm not saying other countries have it perfect, but I'm saying a lot of our specific issues are specific to us.
No, I understand that. I understand that. Although healthcare costs are going up everywhere. I mean, even lots of countries that have a single-pay system are nervous because they're already charging, you know, 50% tax rates to cover this, which most people are comfortable with, because the fact of the matter is the greater amount they pay in taxes is less than the greater amount we pay here in the United States for healthcare.
Yeah, well, and it's
so far.
It's standing cultural thing. I mean, if tomorrow they were asked to pay three times what they pay now in taxes, I mean, that balk here because we've never paid anything that high.
Well, it's not just that.
Even I would freak out if tomorrow you said I can totally give you healthcare, but
yeah, I know
50% taxes.
But there's also a difference in how liberty is defined here as compared to there. You know, liberty in Europe, by and large, is I'm free not to worry about my healthcare.
There's different socialist programs.
Yeah, I'm free not to worry about my education. Here, liberty means freedom from government intervention, freedom from authority, and so
freedom to pay your own dang way.
So yeah, so here, if you told somebody, well, what if your taxes, you could pay 50% tax rate, but the amount of money you're paying in taxes is a lot lower than the amount of money you're paying in healthcare, so you actually end up with more money. The person would, a typical American would say, I understand the math, but I would rather pay a little more for my healthcare and pay a little less for my taxes, especially if I'm getting better healthcare for what I'm paying. What I want, what a typical American would say, what I want is for healthcare costs to be under control. I don't want the government to pay for me. Now, that's probably going to change in the future. People are getting more and more willing to accept this kind of idea. And so-called Obamacare actually is a gateway to a single-pay system. There's a lot of ways that might happen. You're going to have companies dump their employees because they can, and those employees are going to go to the public option, and then there are going to be some employees at this company over here that see that that public option is a better deal, so they're going to leave, and then that company won't be able to support the few people left who are on their plan, so they're going to have to dump the rest of their employees. Yeah. And so the public option grows and grows, and before you know it, you have a single pay system and everybody's okay with it. Now, that doesn't have to happen, and it might not happen, but that's one thing that could happen, and that's what I think a lot of Democrats, including Barack Obama, want to happen. And that's fine. Whatever happens, happens. But all of these things, you know, the whole question about modern medicine, because it's not really a separate issue how much it costs and how much costs are going up, because how doctors do their job is intimately connected to how much drug companies are charging for drugs, how drug companies push drugs, how much equipment companies are charging for their equipment, how much the hospital is charging, who's getting rich and who's not out of this deal, what government policies are. All of that stuff ultimately drills down into that doctor-patient interaction. And right now, the doctor-patient interaction, by and large in the United States, is really poor. Mm-hmm. And it's because all this other stuff is messed up. So, you know, it's a bad, and people are dying because of it. Really? I mean, I've got too many stories about friends and relatives who have died in botched procedures or whatever. Like I said, including my mother, including a friend of mine, including my mentor, Carl Couch, died in a botched procedure.
I almost died several times in my tonsillectomy.
Are you being facetious?
No, haven't I told you that story?
No.
The story of my tonsillectomy is a 2 to 3 day horrific saga that has at least two different places, I think maybe three, where had my mother not been a fairly observant registered nurse, I'd be dead.
Wow.
And the story ends with, and it was a year before my blood levels came back to normal.
Jeez.
My tonsillectomy, having my tonsils out my sophomore year in college, it's an amazing, disturbing, horrific story that involves hallucinating on my part, my desire to commit suicide, wow, tremendous amounts of blood loss, procedures that normally should be done when you're not awake, lots of bad stuff.
Well, what kind of medication were they giving you for a tonsillectomy that you were feeling extreme depression and hallucinating?
No, that came later when I had to stay there for observation after we found out the problem, which was after I had gone home, after I had lost a lot of blood, and then we got me to the hospital, and then we screwed up the pain medication I was allowed to have and severely overdosed me and put me in a situation where people had to spend the night standing next to my bed and slapping me if I started to fall asleep because I had too much meds and I could die. And at that point, I was kind of hallucinating, and at that point, I was genuinely trying to figure out if I had the strength to throw myself out the window.
Wow.
I learned that night what a cautery is. Several times.
Yeah.
I know what blood looks like after it's been in your stomach for a while and then you throw it up.
Yeah. Oh, that's horrible.
Amazing stuff. It's a hell of a story. I'll tell you sometime when we're not crazy over our time.
Well, thank you, Kia B, Mark McKibben, Anon, and Blood Sparrow.
Speaking of which, Blood Sparrow, you owe me a link to a video of you doing some sort of exercises that I absolutely will use for physical fitness purposes and not masturbate to. That was out loud, wasn't it?
Yeah, you really should. You really should.
We can edit that out. We won't, but we could. Anyway, you said you're going to give me a video. I need that. So, write the hat. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Go to the blog. TheMagicalTalkingHat.com. Like us on Facebook. Well, The Magical Talking Hat. Like it on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. @NotQuiteTony. And tune in next week.
Next week for episode 86.
86. A lot of jokes with that. Quick. Favorite guitarist of the 80s?
I don't know.
Wrong.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.